Thanks for tuning in once again to the Vigilance Press Podcast. Before we get started, I wanted to say a few words about our handsome and gracious sponsors, Noble Knight Games. They're at www.noblenight.com. They're great for all your gamer shopping needs. They've got $9.95 or less flat rate shipping. Huge backstock of out-of-print games, anything you want to find. Especially proud of their back catalog of first edition Gamma World and second edition Gamma World. So Noble Knight, they rock. They're beautiful men with incredible singing voices, and they can bake. So check them out online. And thanks, Noble Knight, for sponsoring us. We appreciate it. On with the show.
They ship baked goods?
You got to talk to them about that, man. Interstate Comics.
Gamer's version of Harry and David, right?
There you go.
What's Harry and David?
Oh, come on. Harry and David, they sell all the things your grandma wants for Christmas, is chocolate and dried fruits and
man, that sort of stuff. All my grandma wants for Christmas is liquor and cigarettes. You got a different kind of grandma than I got. You got Norman Rockwell grandma.
Yeah.
And that wise acre over there making remarks is John Lighthouser, the line developer of Mutants and Masterminds Third Ed. How you doing, John?
Great. Excellent.
Thanks for joining us again. Appreciate you revisiting us.
You bet. It's always fun.
And co-chairing the podcast with us tonight is Mr. James Dossey of Shadow Chase Studios. Hey, James. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
Cool. How's Florida these days?
It's about as cold as Atlanta. I'm in North Florida, so it's not too much of an improvement right now. But
I'm in Colorado Springs, man, so you can kind of bite me on that, you know?
Well, you know, you come down here with certain expectations, and when it's still 30 degrees at night, it's a bit of a letdown.
And I'm, that sound you hear is the world's smallest violin.
There you go. Okay.
All right. Well, hey, let's jump into the cool stuff. John, recently on MutantsandMasterminds.com, you posted some really cool previews of now these are going to be in Mutants and Masterminds Third Ed, or what's the exact title of the book? Heroes Handbook, or which one?
Yeah, the so for DC, we had DC Adventures Heroes Handbook, and then we followed that up, or are following that up, with the DC Adventures Heroes and Villains Volume 1 and Volume 2, and then we're going to have DC Adventures Universe. Then for Mutants and Masterminds, the first book for, doesn't feel like it, but the first book for third edition is the Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook. So we're sticking with a consistent theme in the naming of those books.
Yeah, one of the things I think you and Steve Kenson both talked about when you originally announced the third edition and your plans for the books was that technically the name of the books was the same, so that people understood that they were getting the same set of rules in both.
Yeah.
You've made a couple of announcements about Errata coming out and for the Heroes Handbook. I'm definitely going to be getting that just from looking at the art. It's fantastic. It looks gorgeous, by the way.
Who was your artist on those?
Yeah, exactly. this is my clumsy segue.
Yeah, the cover, let's see here. It's all the same studio, Imaginary Friends Studio, and the great thing is I asked Hal, who's the keeper of the art budget, and he's does all the production work, but I said, hey, what's the name of the artist who actually did the cover? And he was like, you know, I'll have to find that out. So I don't actually know the name of the actual person who did the art. I just know the name of the art studio, which is Imaginary Friends.
Okay, now, did Imaginary Friends do all of your artwork, or are you still, you know, collecting art?
No, actually, that is a fine question, because let me go over to my art thing here. We have, so you guys should all be jealous, because I'm looking at all the cool color art that we have in right now. So just
can you feel it? Can you feel my jealousy, John?
Off the top of my head, so Darren Culvert, D-Mac, did did some archetypes for us and has done, I'm not sure if he's doing, yes, he did a couple of pieces of actual interior art that are not archetypes. And then we did have quite a few from the Imaginary Friends guys. I know, let's see here, see, now I won't remember. James, what's his name? First name? not Rick James.
Henry James?
Scott James.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Henry James, yes.
He always signs it James, so.
Yeah. And he did some stuff for us as well, and I'm not sure exactly how many pieces he has in there, but I know the Imaginary Friends guy is because it's a fairly large studio or whatever, even if it's four guys, we're able to handle quite a bit of what we needed, and man, cool. Every day I would get a piece of art in. I just got one yesterday, and it's now my desktop because I totally love it.
Now, it looks like they haven't done a lot of RPG work. Looks like they're more... I mean, they're working for DC Comics, Sony Online Entertainment, Electronic Arts, Top Cow, Cartoon Network, WizKids, Upper Deck. So they've done a lot of RPG work there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think HAL definitely tries to get people who have some experience doing comic book work because get then good comic book art out of them. He's always on the look for that sort of thing. And I haven't even looked up their website, so now I'm going to have to look up their website and see.
They don't actually have one. They have a blog. I was reading off Wikipedia. They have a Wikipedia entry.
I'm looking at imaginaryfriendsstudios.com, but this may be something unrelated if you say they don't have a website.
Well, the one I went to, just a stub. Oh, wait, you have to click on that thing. Oh, okay. You shouldn't drink and browse. Some of these basic things will lose you.
Nice
stuff. I've seen some of these images before.
So for those listening at home, it's imaginaryfs.com, and this is some beautiful stuff. I wish we had some of the artists' names so we could name drop them, especially those guys who posted.
Well, click on the artist tab. There's three founders, art directors, senior artists. They have a ton of artists here, digital artists. So I'd say there's at least 20 artists here.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have a couple of names the guys have tossed around. Like there was one guy I think he was calling Jonathan, but I don't see anybody in here named Jonathan. So that might be his westernized name because I know they're located out of the Far East.
Yeah, it looks like they're in Jakarta, it looks like.
Oh, is that it, Jakarta? Okay.
Yeah, that's what Wikipedia says, and Wikipedia wouldn't lie.
Exactly. Actually, I just went in and edited it, so you would look like a fool.
Curse you, John Lighthouser. Curse you.
But
the master of editing things before we know we need them, right?
we really have some great art coming from them, and the concept art. So let me go into that a little bit. The concept art was done by this studio, and we basically said we need. I think it ended up being 23 pieces of art just so that we can get what the characters look like as a general concept. And then when we turn it over to the artist to do the interior artwork and the cover art, they'll have something to go on because obviously we don't have the wealth of art that we do on this new edition of the book that we did for second edition and it got built up during first edition to say, this is what we want this guy to look like. This is, and we can turn over all this reference material. So instead we said, we need these 23 pieces of art. Here's what we'll, give you short descriptions that were probably, I don't even know if they were 100 words each in most cases. I wrote all that stuff up and a couple of reference images for things, which was actually, it's a pretty fun process because it helps you define the character's look, obviously, quite a bit more significantly.
I love commissioning art. I know exactly.
Yeah.
And as great. The artist, I love doing that part of it too. That creative process is a lot more fun than actually doing the work of getting the art done once you've gotten past it.
Got that stuff all written up, sent over to them, and they've just been pumping out all sorts of fantastic things. So,
well, can I ask you some questions about Emerald? I'm sorry, go ahead, James. What'd you have?
Well, I was just going to say, jumping off from that point, you've shown a couple of different previews so far. I was wondering if you wanted to elaborate on some of the one thing I did want to ask. I just noticed that the Rook had appeared in the DC Adventures Heroes Handbook.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least the name. Have the stats changed going from that to the 3E Heroes Handbook, or is he pretty much the same character that we're looking at?
Nope. Yeah, both he and Princess are exactly the same. And in fact, it was kind of funny because I had to contact I had to contact DC and say, we had two sample characters we put in the book. We didn't actually clear them through you to make sure we could actually use them in the future. And we just want to make sure we have the copyright on these. And they were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Go for it. So, but there was probably about an hour or two there when we were like, ah, we might have to come up with like some new ideas. And I really like those characters. And like, that was a little concerning.
Very cool. But, very cool.
Yeah. So those two characters are exactly the same and they walk through the same process. And, it's they sort of started out as really kind of off the cuff, like, hey, we need to come up with some examples. And Steve and I had been batting some ideas back and forth for characters for the Emerald City setting and for the group that eventually became named the Sentinels. And one of them was the Rook and one of them was Princess. And we decided on those two specifically because Princess is a very stat-heavy powers-centric character, even though she's, you know, pretty straightforward, you know, brick powerhouse sort of thing. And then the Rook is a very, like, device character with a lot of skills and with a lot of equipment and not, you know, no powers really at all except for what comes from his equipment. And so it gave a good kind of split down the middle between the two different types of – or two of the different types of characters that are on, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of power types.
Would it be fair to call him kind of a Falcon crossed with a Batman?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, he's in fact, I think even my description of him to the artists was that he had his cloak was something like a, you know, like a cross between the Falcon and Batman. Okay. And what we ended up getting was very different than that in the concept art, which you can tell from what was posted online last week. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of cool with that because it looked like a really cool picture and everybody else was going to be kind of basing their stuff off of that. But it was also really nice because, and I talked about this in the design notes too, is I like giving artists the ability to do a little of their own, put a little bit of their own personality into it. And so you'll see, especially for him, he has very, very different cape slash over the course of his different appearances. Like vastly, vastly different. And I was like, you know what? I could be a stickler about this and be like, no, damn it, it needs to be this. But at the same time, I ended up.
Or you could have a different toy for each design, which
Exactly.
But I mean, isn't that why we have, like, you know, ice Batman and, like, fire protection Batman?
Exactly. Yeah. I wish you would have mentioned that a couple of months ago. I could have thrown in, like, a snow costume for him. And a
there you go.
If he's in the Emerald City.
There's always a future book. But, hey, since you dropped the name Emerald City, and I think that's probably the first time we mentioned it, we're going to pretend for a moment that somebody who's just rolled out of bed and looked at the Mutants and Masterminds website for the first time in like 2 weeks and doesn't know what we're talking about. Could you fill in the listeners basically on what you mean by Emerald City and tell us a little bit about those characters, because I think they're all supposed to be power level 10, you know, exemplars for building new characters.
Yeah. What do you want me to start with?
Well, let's start with about the characters Rook. and then the setting. We'll talk about the setting afterwards.
Yeah. We've been talking about the Rook. Why don't we just stick with him?
Yeah.
Sure. Let me pull up my art again so I can remember exactly all of the heroes and villains and everybody.
Can I make a horrible confession, John?
Yeah.
When I first saw the Rook, I was like, he looks like Blue Falcon, but in a really cool way.
Yeah, and that's fine. No, I don't have a problem with that. There's 10 characters total in the team, and this is kind of a funky thing because the way I'm approaching this from the design and development side is that these characters either exist in the world or you can just take them out and they don't exist and your players take the place of them. And I think that's somewhat different than, you know, if you go to Champions or even if you go to the previous editions of Mutants Masterminds, where you have basically, you have the Champions in Champions and you have the Freedom League in second edition, first and second edition Mutants and Masterminds that kind of take the top spot, right? Especially mm-hmm. for that city. And I think that's good in a way, but I also think it's bad in a way for people who want to be the heroes.
Right.
And so one of the ideas behind this team was there's 10 characters, and the reason why there's so many is because I wanted to give people a lot of different choices. And I specifically wanted them to be PL10 characters so that if they said, hey, I really like this Ultramarine character, I want to play her. Like, I think that would be awesome. And so sure enough, I also made sure they're all power level 10 so that you can just grab one and go. Like, you want to mm-hmm. get started, you know, I want to play a battlesuit character, I'm going to take Ultramarine.
Really, really handy for tournament games and stuff, too.
Yeah. So you can just kind of pick and choose. And so even in my concept of the team in general, like, if I were running a game, maybe I don't want 10 members to be on the team, so I could pick whatever, 5 of them or 7 of them and say, this is the Sentinels for this setting. Great, go for it. I mean, that's totally up to you. So anyway, so that's part of it.
And so the team name is the Sentinels?
Yes, the team name is the Sentinels, and they're all power level 10 characters. And I'm just going to go through these alphabetically because I have their photos in front of me. Dragonite is the Mystic, and in some of this, I'll try not to repeat too much of what I put in the notes there, but there is a and I'll tie this also, I guess, a little bit into Emerald City itself. There's a large international district / Chinatown kind of section to Emerald City because it's a West Coast city.
Okay.
And so Dragonite was sort of a nod towards that for the setting, so it kind of ties him into that, but he's not an integral part of it. He's just, you know, he's an option, basically. So he has magic powers. He's like, some people sort of who have seen him have described him as Green Lantern, and I see him more of like a different version of Doctor Strange, basically. So, you know, Mystic with cool looking powers, and he can do constructs, but that is not necessarily his main thing. So
That's cool.
Yeah. He's actually almost a straight, Mystic archetype, because mm-hmm. I was looking at it and I was like, I have an idea for how this could work almost exactly as written. And the mm-hmm. only thing he really has different, you know, I spell out the 5 or 6 different abilities he has, but the only thing that's a little bit different is I gave him something, just some Mystic Senses, which is called his Dragon Eye. So,
okay. So, jumping back to the idea of the coast or being a West Coast city, that sounds like a really good decision. I'm guessing that was something you decided early on in the process of creating a new city.
Yeah, because we kind of felt like Freedom City really, really did a good job of capturing sort of the East Coast feel. You know, it was definitely a big, super bright, shiny superhero city, and it's great for that. And we wanted to kind of expand the Freedom City universe a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time on Freedom City, and we've kind of explored a lot of the different nooks and crannies. And I think other, you know, players out in the world have also explored a lot of nooks and crannies and defined that city for themselves, or at least I hope they have.
Of course,
a gameplay. Yeah, so we kind of wanted to expand that universe and introduce a new city and a bunch of new characters and have a slightly different personality to the city, mm-hmm. and let people once again start exploring a little bit and start doing some different things and figure out, like, what do we want to make this city into? And, you know, we're just really providing a starting point.
I'm going to ask the really obvious, stupid question, so forgive me, but it's a Seattle analog, right?
Yeah, it's very much a Pacific North. It's not an LA. It could probably be like a San Francisco sort of thing, but it's probably like a Seattle, Portland, Tacoma analog.
This is one of those write what you know type things.
Yeah, it wasn't even initially started as that. We were looking for something to do that's a little different. And I mean, Seattle is a good city for gaming settings because, well, it's been used before for one thing, and it has a different feel because it's a very, you know, it's a, I don't want to say dark because it's not a dark setting at all. It's a very it has a different feel than New York City and then LA and then Chicago, and you know, it has its own personality, and I think that's fairly easy to communicate because people have a picture in their head already of like Seattle. It's rainy and it's near the water, and you know, it's some of it just kind of fills itself in all by itself. So,
well, speaking of unique personalities, the next character on the list is Kid Robot.
Yeah, Kid Robot. Actually, he came up really late in the process. One of the things I did when I went through and made up these characters is I had like five different origins and five different sort of archetypes that I was combining into different things. And so the origins were things like mystic, technological, mutant, dog barking.
She doesn't like mutants. She had a bad experience.
Exactly. mutants, training.
I was going to say, she's eager to get to the werewolf character.
Character. So anyway, so it was mystic, technological, training, mutant, an alien were sort of the five I was working with. And so each of these 10 characters there's two mutants, two aliens, two technological, two training, two et cetera, two, I don't know what I missed, alien, mutant, mystical, I don't know. And then the same thing in terms of sort of their power types. So there's the sort of blaster, energy controller, energy projector sort of character. There's a what I call a generalist, which is sort of like a Thor, Iron Man kind of character, where it's like, yeah, I can lift 100 tons, and I can shoot energy blasts, and I can fly, and all right, yeah, we get it, you're good at everything. And then there's sort of the other, which is sort of the role of the mystic, typically. The mystic or even a leader, that sort of thing, where they have abilities that are slightly hard to quantify or qualify.
Dr. Fates, your Captain America, is that kind of guy.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have, obviously, the powerhouse-type characters. And the other one that I kind of lump in there is sort of like the sneak or maybe the scrapper, that sort of thing. Typically hand-to-hand character, typically good at sneaking around and being, you know. So each of these characters are combinations of those 10 different qualities. The two that are most similar to each other are Princess and Rocky, who are both mutant powerhouses. And that's just kind of how it worked out, and I had a really strong idea for both of what those characters were like. So, So
tell us a little bit about Kid Robot.
Yeah, Kid Robot is the sort of tech blaster. So he was created by a lab and has decided that he wants to go out on adventures, and has teamed up with the Sentinels, who have kind of taken him in. And he's a pretty straightforward kind of force field blaster character. He's not a force field character like Sue Storm is. He's a force field character kind of in his own way. So he's a robot, so he's a construct, which somebody on the boards had pointed out. And he is, in fact, a construct in his write-up. And he has not the greatest defenses until he puts his force field up, and then he's really strong. So he can be hurt when he's just walking around town, that sort of thing. And then his energy blasts or force field blasts or force blasts, whatever you want to call them, are things like he can just shoot a force column, and he can shoot, I'd have to look at the write-up, but, you know, energy blasts and a multi-attack and that sort of thing. So he's got a couple of different effects that he can do that are all just defined as force effects. And he's small, so he's got a level of shrinking or a couple of points of shrinking to,
oh,
to
cool.
get him, yeah, 3 or 4 feet tall. So,
okay,
and nice. That's basically him. He's a kind of a good, fun-loving, fish out of water type character, you know. Mongrel is the next guy, and I like him. And man, some of the art for him in the book is really amazingly cool.
So is he more Wolverine or more werewolf by night, or how would you describe him?
I actually, in the notes I had on the character concept art stuff, is I'd actually conceived of him more of as a Spider-Man analog. Hmm. So he is not, I'm going to rip out your guts and, you know, beat the crap out of you. And he's not a Wolverine guy. He's much more of a, he's much more caring than that. He's the, he's the nice version of Wolverine, if there is such a thing. But he,
a more tender, caring Wolverine.
I'm the best at what I do. And what I do is give hugs. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of thing. But he's much more about, like, he would definitely fit into sort of the friendly neighborhood category. So he's the guy who's watching out for what's going on in the city, keeping an eye on everybody, and that sort of thing. So he was probably operating on his own before the Sentinels really got up and running, and probably not for long. But his secret ID is that of a paramedic. So
okay, so he transforms.
He transforms, yes. He is not always a werewolf. Okay. And in fact, he's actually a half-werewolf, if such a thing is possible. So.
Okay, cool, cool.
I assume it must be possible, since you're setting the example.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And after Munger, go ahead, sorry.
He was bitten by a dying werewolf, and so it didn't quite take, but it turned him into Mongrel, so.
Cute.
Hey, just out of curiosity, and this is just because I used to, back in the day, I played a lot of White Wolf. Do you go into any of the werewolf tribes around Normal City, that kind of stuff, or not so much?
Yeah, you know, that's something that I'm actually working on right now, is to figure out how much of that I really want to define. Mm-hmm. Because it's obviously a perfect fit for this part of the world, but I don't know if I want...
You actually have forests out there.
Yeah, exactly. Forests and mountains and all sorts of stuff. But I don't know if I want to spell it out as much as give clues that this sort of stuff exists. And if you want to expand on it, then you can expand on it. So it'll be it'll definitely be something that there'll be information on. So.
Okay, cool, cool. And next on the hit parade is Princess.
Yeah, Princess, I actually was interesting because I view her as the character the girlfriend will play who's not really into gaming.
Mm-hmm.
no stereotyping here.
Yeah, well, and actually what's funny is when I was running a game recently for a bunch of friends from work, the wife of the guy who was hosting the game was like, sat down one time and we were like, hey, do you want to play? I've got a character right here. And I had just written up Princess for the example DCA. For DCA. And she's like, sure. And I was like, you know, explained a couple of things. And I was like, her name's Princess. And she's like, that's awesome. And it just, and it was perfect. And like within, I don't know, we probably played five or six games that she was there for, you know, all but one of, and she loved it. And then she was like, you know what, can we change the character so I'm actually a Valkyrie? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So now Princess is a Valkyrie in that game. So it was it worked out really well. But yeah, she's just very straightforward, kind of somebody pointed out that she was looked like Fairchild, and that's absolutely a fair comparison, because she's kind of a combination of that kind of archetype from, you know, Fairchild from Gen 13 and really sort of Superman, right? With her whole, like, oh, you just don't recognize me thing. And, she's a good, like, geek girl character to play. She'd definitely be like, any of us would be happy to be her boyfriend, because she's into Star Wars and she's into all that stuff. And she's just more of a fun, loving, lighthearted character that I think is pretty interesting. So,
oh, cool, cool. And next up, the one you mentioned was very similar to her, Rocky.
Rocky, Rocky is one. I don't know. I might have gone.
Adrian, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But he, yeah. And actually, Chris Pramus was like, seriously, you're going to name this guy Rocky? And I said, yeah, it just makes sense. So Rocky is actually his first name, and I in real life have met people named Rocky, so they exist.
They do.
But he was a mutant. Born looking unusual, given up for adoption immediately, and was spent a lot of time in like orphanages, and was basically adopted or was used in government research to learn what they could about mutants. And so he's been like on the cover of Time when he was a kid and like all sorts of stuff like that. Like he's very, very well known. And then when he got towards his probably about 8 to 10 years old, he was actually, because he was already famous, he was hired as a child actor to be in a actually in a sort of an analog of Different Strokes. So it was a TV show, like a sitcom.
You know, that's very similar to a thread we ran in one of my games where one of the players was the subject of a reality show.
Yeah, yeah. So
where they were basically being followed around all the time.
Yep. So he was basically now I can't remember his name, Gary Coleman in Different Strokes, and that all went fine, and he was even more famous. But then his powers got more and more powerful, or his powers got more and more developed. And one day on set, he accidentally turned to point at something and knocked his co-star across the room and broke her face and all sorts of stuff. And so then it was like, you know, Rocky went on a rampage and his powers are out of control. And he just disappeared from public life, basically. Although he still, he was flown over to Japan quite often to participate in strange game shows over there. And so he's learned a number of tricks for his strength based on being in these shows, and speaks Japanese, and so he knows how strong he is. He's very careful about that sort of thing. But yeah, he's very he used to be somebody, and he was probably very depressed for years, and then just decided one day, you know what, I'm gonna go out and do something. And that's basically why he's a hero.
I really love that Gary Coleman is a superhero. I'm sorry. Go ahead, James.
That's all right. One of the things that I'm really liking about these characters, and it's something I don't think I made any secret of it, but when I first saw the previews for second edition, one of the things that I kind of thought, now this was obviously a conscious decision, but the design seemed to be going for archetypes rather than characters. And I always thought that was kind of a disappointment, because I kind of like the idea of showing players a fully fleshed out character with stats that they can play, and it gave them a sense of what you could do with the rules. I think the archetypes give you an idea of what you can do mechanically, but it doesn't really tie in that human or that story quality aspect to it. And I'm really excited about these characters, I have to say. For that reason, but it sounds like there's been a major paradigm shift in the design philosophy there. What's going on with that?
Well, I think that has to do partially. Steve was doing development work earlier in the editions of the games, right? And he has and design and development work, and he stepped back from that. But I think Steve's work was spot on in terms of what he needed to do to make the game work in terms of like what was out there, right? Because you kind of need to fill those top spots. Like you need to define who's your Superman, who's your Green Lantern, who's your Green Arrow, who's your Spider-Man, who's your this, who's your that. You know, you've got the Claremont Academy, which is basically the X-Men Academy. And, you know, you need to get all that stuff out there to kind of like get the broad brush strokes and have people say, okay, yeah, okay, I get this. I understand. Like, all the characters that fill these niches, and then, or these roles. And then what's happening with my work on Emerald City, and Steve obviously had filled all the kind of archetypal roles that were big in the world. And now sort of what I'm able to do is, and he and I had discussed this, is kind of fill in more of the world kind of however we want to. We're still sticking to archetypes, right? Like, I can go down the list of all of these characters, and I can point to other characters that they are similar to, at least in my mind, and hopefully that will come across in both the character write-ups and the backgrounds and things like that. Like, you know, I compared Mongrel to Spider-Man, and I compared Dragon-Eye sort of to, I guess it wouldn't be Doctor Strange in that case because he's only a power level 10 character. But if you wanted to call him...
Well, everybody had to start somewhere.
Yeah, but if you wanted to call him something like, if you called him Iron Fist only with more emphasis on the mystical stuff that he's now discovering as opposed to the physical fighting side, you know? And I'm sure I could come up with a better analog for him. And Princess is sort of Gen 13, sort of Donna Troy, sort of Wonder Woman. Rocky is definitely like the Thing. Both in physical form and really in attitude too, right? He's very
right.
Sort of very sure of himself, even though he's a complete outcast and completely isolated from everybody else around him. And the Rook is definitely he definitely looks like Batman, right? But he's probably personality wise, he's probably more like a Green Arrow. Somebody uh-huh. who basically saw the injustices in the world and decided to go out and do something about it. He doesn't necessarily have like the angst-ridden background of Batman or the Punisher, of like, oh, my family was killed and I must go out and avenge myself eternally. And it's not that sort of thing, but I'm able to, I guess, expand a little bit on the archetypes that are out there and you know, like you said, get more into the character as opposed to having them be a slave to, I have to be like Captain Marvel, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So quick question about the setting of the Emerald City. As I understand it, Freedom City was largely Steve's kind of baby. I mean, he was working with the Freedom City concept before, you know, Mutants and Masterminds really came along.
Yeah,
he was actually. I think he said, wasn't it originally planned to be something for like Champions or Hero System, and then started working with Green Ronin. Would you say that Emerald City is kind of driven by you, or is it something that's more of a collaboration, or is this still more like Steve's world?
No, I think this is definitely driven by me. Steve uh-huh. absolutely has a say in all of it. And he's actually really excited about the Emerald City stuff because he enjoys the design aspect of things, right? He likes
right.
Fleshing that stuff out. And I think he's kind of enjoying having me put together these characters, piece together parts of the world, and say, now let's expand on this.
Okay.
And so I think he likes being surprised by the stuff that I'm sending to him. And
excellent. Cool.
Yeah, and he's having a really good time with it. And obviously, like the character Victor, who we'll talk about in a second, I was like, hey, I've got this idea for kind of a Captain America type sort of pulp character thing. And he was like, oh, that would totally work as like if he's related to Doc Prophet. So why don't we have him be related to the Prophets? And I had some other horrible name for him, like the Guardian or the Protector or something like that. And I was like, yeah, you know, and this name's not doing it for me either. And he said, yeah, I was going to talk to you about that. And so he mentioned the Prophets, and I was like, yeah, you know, that kind of ties in with the whole Freedom City thing. And, you know, the Prophets exist in the world and have for a long time. And so this would just be the next step in sort of that Prophet legacy. And so we just said, hey, what do you think about the name? You know, I sat down and thought about it, and I was like, what do you think about just calling this guy Victor? And his name is Victor Prophet. And he's like, that sounds perfect. Great. Let's go for it. So it's kind of nice to be able to do that back and forth with him. And he's an excellent sounding board. And, you know, if something doesn't sound right to him, I typically will kind of go with what his feeling is on it. So.
Yeah. He seems to have really good instincts with writing, I've noticed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, we kind of covered the Rook previously. Do you want to talk about him some more, or should we go on to the Ultramarine?
Yeah, we can do Ultramarine. And let me just say on Rook, everybody's seen the character sheet and everything, and I don't think there are any updates to it, so it's just straightforward PL10, the Rook that you can find in the book. Same thing with Princess. Maybe if there were errata bits and things like that, something might have been fixed or changed, but... that's the sort of character you're going to see in final form. So now for Ultramarine was is basically like a Navy brat. Instead of just going a straight like, oh, I'm a you know, the swimming, fish-controlling character, uses trident, controls water. I thought, oh, it'd be interesting to just do a battle suit and have that be the origin of why it's a battle suit. It's not some great weapon. It's not some, you know, device commissioned by the government or whatever. Instead, it was something that was started basically to be a diving suit and grew from there because the people working on it were tinkerers and geniuses. And so this was actually developed by so the person inside is a woman, Veronica, and she and her father and her brother worked on the battle suit. So, of course, you know, the father gets killed by the brother. The brother steals one of the battle suits, doesn't know about the other one. The sister takes the other battle suit. And so then you have the bad guy Steelhead, who is going to be one of the bad guys in the setting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And Ultramarine is the good guy. So that's the girl in the battle suit. Who's,
and I was going to ask you if her real name was Seamus.
Oh, no. It's
a video game reference. Sorry.
Oh yeah, no, I do get that, but that's not that also was not the origin of the character. This tend to be pretty insular when I'm coming up with characters that are for this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so she now she uses the battle suit basically to kind of live up to her father's memory, basically. So
excellent.
One of the things that was in the art notes is I wanted a real simple circular, sort of a double line circular image for the chest burst blaster and the different pieces of glowy bits on her armor, and because it mimics the symbol for the Navy, which is just a simple circle. U.S. Navy. So, I mean, it's a really minor thing, but I was like, oh, that'd be kind of a neat thing, like just to have this character have that in mind. When they designed it, is like, oh, this looks like the Navy symbol. So it's a real tiny little thing, but it's kind of interesting. So anyway, so she's
a Navy guy.
Oh, really? Yeah. So she's a tinkerer, and she's got a bad guy out there. And I'm a little leery to actually include Steelhead anywhere because I don't really want any of these characters to be an integral part of the setting. So Steelhead might exist. And I don't think his information, he's not written up yet, his information won't include anything about Ultramarine. But Ultramarine's background might include information about Steelhead being her brother, if that makes any sense.
Gotcha.
Hey, just one quick, probably inappropriate question. Just want to give a shout-out to Lame Mage Publishing, who they actually had a similar character back in Second Ed, like 2 or 3 years ago. They had a villain called Dreadnought, who was a water based villain with a super science underwater suit of armor.
Yeah, nothing's original.
Well, it was Evil Genius number 2. I was giving a shout out because I'm a big fan of their stuff.
Yeah, they do really good stuff.
Ben Robbins is a great guy. I think he was one of your original playtesters for First and Second Ed.
Evil Genius, was that? I'm trying to remember who's in charge of that one.
Lame Mage Publishing does it. Ben Robbins.
Yeah.
He has a great blog, arsmuddy.com. Sorry, gotcha. Storn Cook did the art for that book. But Second Ed, so that's old school now. But yeah. Anyway, sorry.
It's old school. It's like 2 weeks ago.
Second Ed. It's retro now, man. That's like playing Vigilantes. All right, that's old.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
That's making a revival, but that's a whole different story. So moving on, the next guy will be Victor, the son of Dr. Prophet.
Yes. So
Man of Marble.
About Victor before. Did that actually get recorded? Or
let's assume it didn't.
Okay. So Victor is the son of the Man of Marble, who was Doc Prophet back in the pulp era, and so I definitely borrowed some concepts from Tom Strong and that sort of thing, and basically saying. Doc Prophet went off onto some crazy isolated place and to raise his family, and Victor is the result, and Victor has been raised to kind of be a paragon, but not in the rules sense or the archetype sense. He's a good guy. He's a Captain America type guy. Comes back to America to to kind of fight the good fight. But he's, you know, physically perfect. He's the leader type guy. And then he's, kind of in my mind, he's one of those, sort of undefinable other characters. And he has a lot of leadership skills. So he physically is not the toughest character in the world. But he does have abilities to make the rest of the team perform that much better. So he's got inspire, and he's got leadership, and he's got setup, and I might be wrong about that, but you know, different abilities like that that are kind of important to keep him important on the team. You know, make the team go better. And he's also got a space age blaster that shoots an attack that targets Will and a regular energy blast that's like 5 damage and
Neat.
I think an affliction. So he's got a couple of different things where he can basically kind of exploit somebody's weakness. So he's again, he's not the toughest guy, but he's got a couple of different options to make him useful.
I can't help but notice in his art he's wearing Jodhpurs.
Yes, love the Jodhpurs.
I do too.
And big fan of Jodhpurs on characters. They're just so distinctive.
I happen to have some myself in the closet.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. They're hard to find on my size, but yeah, no, I'm lying completely. Sorry. I do a lot of Steam Age LARPing, and actually, that's really big in Denver. I was talking to a bartender place I go, and they had a post-apocalyptic steampunk New Year's Eve party last year when they had Zeppelins, like little miniature Zeppelins, filled with hydrogen and marshmallows floating around the bar while everything was going on.
Huh. Sounds cool to me.
And they had like, you know, 200 people packed into a bar that was, you know, rated for 100 people. And everyone.
I was just at SteamCon this last, or 2 weeks ago in Seattle, which was actually pretty cool to see all the costumes.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Unfortunately, people popped all the Zeppelins and they fell to the floor with the marshmallow treats. And because you had all those big dudes in there in, you know, woolen coats and top hats, it was really hot and all the marshmallows melted and the waitress is there until 7 a.m. And hey, let's move on to Vortex, the next character in the
Actually, I was going to ask a quick question just brought up by Prophet here. One of the nice things about the Freedom City universe is that it does have a long history, including some really elaborately laid groundwork for like mystical games that kind of cross or mystical villains like the Serpent Society and things like that, and some other sci-fi stuff like the time traveling heroes and whatnot. How much of that are you how much new stuff do you think you're bringing to the table with this one, and how much of it are you bringing from Freedom City?
Well, all that stuff is still going to be there from Freedom City. We are advancing our sort of behind the scenes, I don't know, our timeline a little bit. Like probably 5 years has passed since Freedom City came out. Well, it certainly has in the real world, and we're probably going to have that be the case in the setting as well. The Freedom City stuff you'll eventually end up seeing is going to be slightly different than the first and second edition stuff, so... All that stuff is there to draw on, and you know exactly what's going to happen with it. Yeah, I'm not gonna commit to anything right now.
Well, I know it's a little early for that.
But yeah, all that stuff is going to exist and definitely is significant. So
very cool, very cool. Okay, Vortex.
So Vortex is the he's the wisecracker, sort of in the annoying way, and he's the concept for him is sort of ex-villain, but really he was just kind of tricked or forced into being a bad guy, and once he figured a way out of it, he joined up with the heroes and is now sort of trying to make a better name for himself. But he's potentially one of the more powerful members of the team, simply because of a couple of the feats that he has, because I think he has accurate attack and power attack. So he can do, you know, attacks that run anywhere from plus, I have to do the math in my head now, you know, plus 7 damage with a plus 13 to hit, all the way up to plus 3 to hit and plus 17 damage. So he's got a pretty wide range, because I think his base is a 12.
Yeah, it sounds like...
Yeah, but he can teleport. He can go to other dimensions, but he doesn't know any of them. So he
would
doesn't.
Would you say he's kind of like a speedster archetype?
Yeah, I mean, I would actually. I know in the Instant Hero book for second edition, they put speedster and teleporter together, and that kind of makes my brain hurt a little bit because I view those things as two different things, but really I guess I can understand how they put them together or why they put them together. But yeah, he's definitely the teleporter. I mean, a very troublesome teleporter because he likes to cause trouble. So
okay, what were your inspirations for that character?
For him, actually, he's one of the few in here that are actually based on an old character of mine that I liked the idea of better than I liked my execution of it. And so with him, I kind of got a chance to sit down and say, okay, so what's really at the core of this character and what's going to make him most interesting? Because when I played him previously, he had been a reporter and then he was a student and I just had no clue, like, what is this guy going to actually be? Like, what's his personality? And so then for this one, I was like, hey, you know, one of the things I'm really missing on this team is the redemption seeker, the guy looking to kind of better his name. And that really made him click. And it was a good set of powers. It was a good motivation, kind of an interesting character. And like, he could still be a little bit of a jerk and the rest of the team would kind of dislike him, but also like him because, you know, he really does mean well. And, I think the character holds together a lot better now.
Okay. Well, you didn't
Snarky
say
Human Torch type.
Yeah. Yeah. That sort of thing.
Okay. You didn't say Nightcrawler. So that's all I was fishing
for. No. Yeah. I didn't say Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler's, I don't know what he would be actually. I mean, definitely teleporter, but, Vortex is big time, full bore energy blaster type character. So,
gotcha.
That's the other thing he does is he opens portals in front of his hands, like small portals, and he shoots beams of whatever's in this other dimension. So he might go to, you know, to talk in D&D terms, like the elemental plane of fire, and a gout of fire would blast out of this little portal he's opened. Or
he's got variable descriptors on that or something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So he can do any environmental effect is the
Oh, very cool.
So okay. Yeah, he can do lightning and he can do wind and he can do water and he can do, you know, that sort of thing.
Sweet.
Okay, well that's better than dimensions full of like deep fried Twinkies because that would be a lame kind of projectile weapon. Just thinking out loud.
You'd
there.
Have to find that dimension first. So.
It's out there somewhere. Just hey, exactly. Xeno is the next character. Resident Alien.
Xeno is definitely another take on sort of the John Jones type of character, Martian Manhunter. Got the shape-shifting. He can go intangible. Like, if you combined Xeno and Sudo from the Freedom League, you would have all of John Jones. This is a character actually still kind of in flux for me. I have to actually put some hard and fast things down on paper for right now. It's a her and I'm pretty sure it's going to stay a her, but it's an alien who's stuck here on Earth and is bonded with a human.
Bonded as in like a symbiote, kind of like DS9, or bonded like married, or how do you mean?
No, strapped to his back. So okay. No, it's
the dog didn't like that answer, John. You better explain.
Bonded like the two of them were combined in a horrible teleporting accident, sort of bonded.
Oh, okay, so sort of like Rick Jones and Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Okay,
that's
yeah.
Whatever John, so. James, and I said at the same time together, exactly. Like.
Well, I went for the anime reference, which was probably a mistake. Your reference was much more on topic.
But yeah, so that's and you know, super strong. Again, sort of a generally good character at everything. So. Got a ranged I-beam attack, super strong, can fly, pass through objects, change your shape, that sort of thing.
So,
big eyes.
Is this kind of a backdoor way of expanding the Freedom City cosmic universe?
Yeah, partially. But again, this was another one of those instances of, like, I really need an alien. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to come up with something that looked alien, had some cool powers, and hopefully has some interesting character quirks about her, you know? But I'm really happy with how the visuals turned out, and I really like the character.
Do we know what planet she's from?
The language is, so I guess probably the planet is Rulu, R-U-L-U, because she speaks Ruluan.
That wasn't mentioned in Freedom City, is it? Was it?
No, that's totally new. That's
a new thing then. All right, cool. That's sweet. A new thing.
So there, that took us an hour to get through 10 characters.
Awesome.
Well,
we've got a bunch more to talk about, though, don't we?
Yeah, I'm sure we do. I'll try and be a little faster.
Actually, well, what we could do, if you want, is we could break it into two shows. We could, because this is stuff we could probably release so far, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So well, we could make this two shows, and if you're getting tired, we could do a second session at some other point. It's kind of up to you, John.
That's okay. We can. I mean, I can't go for a lot longer, but I can certainly go for a while longer. That's not a problem at all.
Okay. Let's end the first podcast there and jump right into some questions for the second one.